Coming up on Golf Today, new year on Maui for the new dad. Young poppy Jordan Spieth looking to back up his bounce back 2021. And Justin Thomas, like Spieth, a past century TOC winner, hoping to break from the gates quickly once again. Nelly Korda and American history, what she could do to get even better in the season ahead. And one and two in the world in the men's game, loading it up at Kapalua this week, John Rahm and Colin Morikawa. Who's likely to end 22 on top of the rankings? Here we go. Two solid hours of golf talk on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Hello again and welcome. Rich Lerner alongside the president of the Phil Mickelson Fan Club. That would be Eamon Lynch, I think the finest columnist in our game. Golf week, and we're happy to have him as a great contributor here, Golf Channel. Eamon, when a player wins a tournament, any tournament, typically we will say, if they're not qualified, well, they earn the invitation to the Masters. This event as well, on Maui, is a really nice perk, isn't it?
It really is a nice little side hustle to get. And our defending champion this year is actually a nice little bit of juicy trivia for you. Harris English is here this week. Obviously, he won twice last season, at Travelers and the Century. But he didn't win to get into the Century last year. That was the season compromised by COVID. So the tour took the top 30 finishers in the FedEx Cup of the previous season. And that's how Harris English got into the field to win last year.
As a New Yorker, cold weather, how much do you simply enjoy watching this event year in, year out?
Resentment and vinegar. And it doesn't do much for my disposition, Rich, to sit and look at what we just saw there in terms of beaches and sunsets.
You're well fed. You were just in Florida and Arizona taking, what, another seven or eight lessons?
Just only two, Rich, only two. I'm on a diet.
Century Tournament of Champions. We have an excellent field. How about eight of the top 10 in the official world golf ranking? Only Dustin and Rory not playing this week. 23 of the top 30 from the final 2021 FedEx Cup standings. And 38 of 39 winners from 2021 are there. All four major champs and the players' winner from 2021 teeing it up on Maui. Living the good life in Hawaii, but these players have all earned it after all. How many can fly a bunker 310 yards out, stiff a 7-iron from a buck 82 to a hole that's tucked on the edge or center cut a 6-footer with a million and change on the line? It's stock and trade for the men in this field. Steve Burkowski, you can see, has earned his place covering the best in the world. And Burko, aloha.
Good morning, Rich, and let Eamon know it's about 70 degrees, a nice gentle breeze here on a Tuesday at Kapalua. So in case he was a little bit scorned by the weather in the Northeast, we can just rub a little salt in the wound on this Tuesday. As preparation continues and players filtering out again, sort of the trend here at this event, they get out early, they get their work done, usually by early afternoon. And we saw that trend continue or actually begin really in earnest on Monday when Justin Thomas, a two-time winner of this event, was out. He played the back nine, happened to catch up with Justin throughout the course of his practice round and talked about his goals for 2022, as well as being back at a place that he loves so dearly.
I think the golf course fits my game pretty well. You know, it's a place where you can take advantage of your length a little bit, but it's a lot of wedges, a lot of short irons, and I feel like that's a strength in my game. But at the end of the day out here, it's just all because the fairways and greens are so big, everyone's going to be hitting a lot of fairways and greens, and it's about scoring, so you're going to need to make some putts.
When you have a new year upon you, how much do you look back at 2021 and what you tried to achieve and maybe reassess some things moving forward?
Right now, not at all. I mean, that's what the last couple months have been for, and we definitely did that already and kind of assessed what we wanted to do. But now it's a new year. I know it's not a new season, but it feels like a new season, and it's time to look forward, not backward.
What's on the list of things you hope to get done this year?
I mean, it's a lot of stuff. I'm sure people could guess. I mean, everybody knows I don't share what I'm trying to do. I mean, it's all pretty self-explanatory. But at the end of the day, I just need to keep working on the things I need to work on and kind of just sharpen up and tighten some things here and there just throughout the bag. And, you know, I feel like we can have another great season.
What have you learned through the years of being not only at this event, but being on the PGA Tour and maybe getting a little more comfortable each and every time out?
It's tough. I mean, I feel like you want to learn something each year, or especially each failure you have, you want to try to learn from it. And I mean, time management is always huge. But I think for me, it's just about really going to golf courses and tournaments that I feel like I can win. You know, I think there's a lot of tournaments, not maybe not a lot, but there's tournaments in the past that I've maybe gone to because I feel like I need to fill a schedule or I need to do this, when in reality, I was going there knowing that it wasn't my favorite golf course, not necessarily because it was bad, but just didn't fit my game or my eye personally. And, you know, I feel like I'm at a point in my career when going forward, I don't need to do that. You know, I need to go to places where I feel like I can win every time I tee it up. And that'll probably be more of the mindset.
All the best this week, Justin. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate it, man.
No surprise, Justin Thomas thrilled to be back here in Maui. Goals set very high for this upcoming year. The same could be said for Jordan Spieth, Justin's good buddy from way back in junior golf. They played the back nine together on Monday. It was really good to see those two guys back at it, giving each other the needle, having a little bit of fun. And Jordan Spieth has had success here as well. He won this tournament back in 2016, and after getting back in the winner's circle a year ago, for the first time in 4 years on the PGA Tour, Jordan also thrilled to be back in Maui, and this time as a new father.
It's been a lot of fun. It was, you know, it was nice to be home. You know, our timing worked out really well. It was nice to spend a lot of time at home, and then we're excited to hit the road together. And yeah, certainly, it's been super, super fun, especially recently as, you know, you started to get a little bit older.
One here in 2016, back after a few years. How much more meaningful is it to be here in Maui in 2022 for you?
I think it's just as meaningful as it always is. I mean, this is just qualifying for this event is probably the first goal on the list every single year you want to win on the PGA Tour. And, you know, it was a few years off here. And it so being back is was, you know, a place that there were times where I just really wished that this would be possible. So try not to take it for granted and really enjoy being here. And then I've had a lot of good success at this event. So really trying to, you know, get dialed in and really make a push to try and qualify for this event at the first opportunity you have.
Why do you think you've done so well here in the past?
You know, it's got a lot of feel aspects to it, some similarities to kind of Augusta, a lot of, you know, speed putting, some long putting, big breakers, and then in the fairways you don't really have a flat lie, a lot of uneven lies, and playing in the wind. So those are kind of all things I really enjoy that kind of allow me to play golf and not think golf. And just being out here today, you kind of start to get that feel again.
What do you take from the last 12 months that you look to build on moving forward?
Well, I think, I think my confidence level is in a different place. I feel really optimistic going forward. I really like to capitalize. I felt like, you know, looking back on the year as kind of solid a year as it was as far as amount of times in contention, I really felt like I should have won 3 or 4 events based on the positions I was in. So, you know, working my way into contention, you know, is obviously a goal each week, but then capitalizing is a whole new animal and a whole nother animal, and was able to do it once. I'd like to do it more often this year.
You just heard Jordan Spieth, that is, say he's extremely confident heading into 2022. I got that sense as well after speaking with him on Monday. And, Rich, there was just a sense that things were right on Maui to see Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth together in a practice round. You have a good idea and good feeling, at least I do, after speaking with both of them, that big things in store for them in the next 12 months, and they both would like to add another win in this tournament here this week in Maui by Sunday afternoon. We'll see if that comes to fruition.
Berko, thank you. And yes, these two have been linked since they played junior golf together. And I always love this picture. I don't know if that's a sandwich, a hamburger, a hot dog. But that screams junior golf. We've all been there. Just not as good as those two, Eamon.
No, they grow up and we grow older, Rich.
Yeah. And by the way, they had a moment, the 2012 NCAA Championships at Riviera in Los Angeles. Jordan playing for the University of Texas, Justin for Alabama in the final. And they squared off mano a mano. And Jordan holed a 4-iron on the 15th hole, had the magic even back then for an eagle. And he beat Justin 3-2. And Texas won the national championship, both with enormous success professionally. But now we just sort of saw phases of a life. We get to watch these great young players grow up. Where are they? Not just in golf, Eamon, but in life.
Well, look where they were a year ago, Rich. I think it's really interesting. You had Justin Thomas was on a high last year. He was in contention, and he made that comment there in that interview with Berko about learning from every failure. Well, he had one at this tournament last year when he was caught using a homophobic slur on a microphone. And he found himself in the middle of a social media firing squad for quite a while. Now, the firing squad eventually moved on to the Kardashians or Kanye or whoever the next target was. But it took him a lot longer, I think, to move on, even despite that win in the Players' Championship. So he kind of started a downward trajectory in a way through most of last year, where it was at the Waste Management last year that Jordan Spieth started to move in the other direction. He wasn't eligible for this tournament last year. He was ranked number 92 in the world. He hadn't been in this tournament since 2018. And suddenly he's now up to, I think he's, what, number 9 or 10 in the world rankings? 14 in the world rankings. So his trajectory has been very much upward, while Justin Thomas seems to have stalled over the last year. But they're both now at that period, you know, they're about 2-3 years behind Rory McIlroy in the life cycle. You know, they're getting married, Justin Thomas just got engaged, Jordan Spieth just had his first kid. That complicates life a little bit. You know, you start to make compromises here and there because you have other obligations that you just don't have earlier in life.
Yeah, I get that. And we like, how is fatherhood going to impact whatever the player? We all have jobs, right? Lots of people have children. They go and they do their jobs. Now, in some cases, maybe if someone, say, like Jason Day, was father to 3 children, early 30s, to your point, it does get a little more complicated, a little more hectic. Maybe it's harder to carve out the 3-4 hours you need to work on your game. Maybe that becomes 1 hour. Who knows?
Didn't hurt Jack over the years, right?
No, it didn't. On the subject of Justin Thomas, he has experienced some growing pains. I would say growing into greatness. But no one who knows him or has followed him closely does not think he will get there. He is just too damn good, and he cares so damn much. Yeah. I think he's already great. I think we can comfortably say, what is it, 14 wins, a major and a Players. I think he probably feels that he's a 35-win, 4-major guy with a Players, 2 Players, when all is said and done. And I think he still has a realistic chance to get there. I think he probably needs to, and this goes to what happened with that foul language, foul ball that you referenced at Maui. He probably needs to dial back the intensity just a fraction. So just sort of ease up a little bit. I think he's hard on himself.
I think he might think you're selling him short by 35 wins and 4 majors. He certainly has the kind of belief in himself that would suggest more than that. And the only thing that seems to have held him back over the last year, other than finding himself in the middle of situations that were of his own making, is the short stick. And every time you see Justin Thomas at a tournament now, he seems to be spending an inordinate amount of time on the putting green trying to work things out. And that has held him back a little bit. But he started to make some noises recently that he's feeling a little better. And his last few results in 2021 suggested that he'd found some comfort with it. So I'm sure he's convinced that he's setting himself up for a year on the order of 2017.
And last thought on Jordan Spieth. His comeback was the feel-good story the first half of 2021. But I do think there are still some lingering doubts about his ability to drive the ball consistently and effectively. But in part because he is so likable and because he showed us last year that he's still the leader in strokes gained. I can't believe what I just saw. I do feel like he's going to win more big titles, Players, major championships. I don't think by any stretch he's done in that department.
Oh, no, not at all. I think you'd be insane to bet that way with him. If you look at his strokes gained off the tee statistics, he's outside the top 130 in the last few years, which is in the discomfort zone for Jordan Spieth. He was a solid middle of the pack and a higher ranked competitor in that category for a long time. No one is a better bet to win when he's in the mix than Jordan Spieth. He is the one thing that a lot of these guys don't have, which is the ability to win ugly when things are going sideways. We saw it at Birkdale when he won from the driving range. We saw it at Chambers Bay when he imploded on the 71st hole. He can get it done when it's winning ugly, and it's never dull.
Yeah, I think about what Padraig Harrington said when Brandel at the PNC Championship asked him what made Tiger so good. It's a broad question. He said he never gave up on a shot, that if Tiger made 5, it was the best 5 he could make. If he made 6, it was the best 6 he could make. I think Spieth has a little bit of that in him as well. Let's get to Paige McKenzie into the mix. And Paige, go ahead. Tell me I'm wrong. Go ahead. Fire away.
Yeah, I don't know why I love this segment so much, because I feel like I get bashed every now and then. But tell me I'm wrong. Justin Thomas, like this year, or like last year, will finish higher in the world ranking than Jordan Spieth this season.
I think you're wrong because I think Jordan wins a major championship, and because of that, I think Jordan will end up finishing higher in the world rankings. Though I do think Justin has a bit more overall game. That weakness, though, shows up. Major championships, you touched on it, the putting.
Well, I think this one could be a push here, Paige, because Justin Thomas has actually got more points at stake, and the way the points erode over time in the world rankings. He had a much better 2020 than Jordan Spieth did. Jordan only had two top tens that year. So Jordan has less at stake, so he's going to gain on him that way. But I still think, ultimately, that Justin Thomas is likely to be the more consistent competitor. So I'm on your side on this one. I think Justin Thomas will finish higher.
What else, Paige?
I like the split, and I love the math. All right, tell me I'm wrong. Justin Thomas will win a major in 2022.
I think you're wrong because I think Jordan wins one. I don't think Justin, my major winners this year. Rory, I said yesterday, that was one of my bold predictions, will complete the career Grand Slam, win the Masters. I think Rahm, Morikawa, I'm going mostly chalk here. Rahm, Morikawa, Spieth are the major champs in 2022, but who knows?
I think you're both wrong. Jordan Spieth isn't winning a major this year, and I think that Justin Thomas, who's the better bet to win a major this year, I still think the comfort level isn't there with a putter, and that's often the deciding factor.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think JT, we've seen the shaky putter throughout his career. It's gone up and down. It'll be interesting to see if this season, whether he can control it and harness it. All right, well, I think I know the answer for both of you, but you can justify why. Jordan Spieth, tell me I'm wrong, Jordan Spieth will win a major in 2022.
Yeah, I'm on board. I think Jordan's winning a major. I think his game's getting closer. I think he figures out a way to drive it respectably. I don't think he'll be a great driver, but drive it respectably. Then his iron game we know is so good. And around the greens, I don't think there are many better. Maybe Patrick Reed, but yeah, that's why Spieth's jumping back in. His confidence level's where it needs to be as well.
I still think he's obviously reduced the level of erraticism off the tee that we saw for a few years there. He put himself in great position at Royal St. George's to finish second to Morikawa, but I still don't think he trusts it quite enough for the four rounds of a major championship just yet.
Yeah, I think I'm banking on the Masters, so we'll know pretty soon whether that prediction is correct or not. All right, boys, I don't like feeding the beast on this one, but I can't resist. Tell me I'm wrong. Brooks Koepka is going to win more than Bryson DeChambeau this season.
I think you're wrong, but I think both will have good years. I think Bryson's winning three tournaments. Brooks will actually win two, but not a major, which goes against the grain of where we typically think Brooks thrives. But I'll say Bryson wins just one more than Brooks Koepka.
I think Brooks wins in this one here simply because he's healthy for a change for the first time in at least 2 years at this point. Plus, I think the removal of the green reading books is going to have an adverse impact on Bryson through the course of this year because he's so reliant on them. And I think Brooks is probably going to win 10-8 on Twitter.
Good points all around, Eamon. I like what you're bringing to the table on adding in the greens reading book. I think that's one of the things that you're right. It could very much affect several players out there, but obviously notably Bryson DeChambeau.
But could I just jump in on the 10-8 Twitter victory for Brooks? I happen to like bully Brooks, brooding, quiet Brooks, better than Instagram Twitter Brooks, because old Brooks, quiet, brooding Brooks, didn't give a damn about fame. He just won majors, which, you know, the new Brooks has not done for a few years. Now, be it for me to question a guy who's won four majors, but I will say, and this goes to our conversation yesterday about that player impact program, there are two ways you get paid in professional golf these days. You get paid for your play on the golf course, and you get paid for what you put on Twitter and how successful you are in engaging an audience on Twitter and Instagram. And Brooks is he's played that game fairly well, but personally, I like old Brooks a little bit better.
Well, I don't think brooding Brooks is much different from the one we actually saw on the golf course a while ago. Now he just actually needs to fire some shots. It's just, when he's unhealthy, the best shots he takes are on social media.
You like Brooks in the thong.
I will say the one New Year's resolution I want is no more pip talk. The influence of the pip is not good.
Well, that does raise some questions. I mean, because, you know, guys are throwing stuff out there. Mickelson half jokingly said, wait for my next controversial comment. Guys are just throwing stuff out there. And I think it you know, it probably will lead to something a little bit unsavory at some point. Guys are just throwing stuff out there to tweak people to get a response with this, you know, and drive up their numbers. Right, Eamon?
Absolutely. Well, you got to do what you got to do, Rich. You got to eat.
Nelly Korda making a bit of history here, has now spent more weeks at world number one than any other American, 26. Now, keep in mind, these Rolex world rankings go back only to 2006. And before that, we had some wonderful American players, Julie Inkster, Pat Bradley, Patty Sheehan, Betsy King, Nancy Lopez, going further back, Kathy Whitworth, the all-time victory leader at 88, the legendary Mickey Wright, Patty Berg, and Babe Zaharias. With more on Nelly, we welcome back Paige McKenzie. And Paige, what are your expectations for the world number one in this new year?
Well, what I'm hoping for is that we've just scratched the surface for what we've seen from Nelly Korda. I think we all know she's still young, she's still maturing, she's still gaining experience. And with every step that we've followed her along her journey up until this point, she's continued to impress. So as far as expectations go, I don't want to go overboard. I mean, she's already number one in the world, but it will be interesting and it will be fun to watch if she can continue this growth trajectory that she's had over the course of since she's turned pro at the age of 17.
What do the numbers tell you as you take a deeper dive into what Nelly has done?
You know, what we've seen and what we can visually see with our eyes is just the explosiveness of which Nelly plays on the golf course. So some of the numbers help describe that. She led the LPGA Tour in total driving. That's the combination between driving distance and accuracy. She was seventh on tour in driving distance, 44th in accuracy. That's where you get the number 51. Another important number is that number six. That's total ball striking. She was number one in total driving and number five in greens and regulation. That's where you get the combined number of six. Also the best on tour. Scoring average. There was a lot of debate at the end of the year why the LPGA was not able to award her the Vair Trophy for the lowest scoring average, but she did capture the lowest stroke average at 68.77. That's extraordinary. And she did it because of the explosiveness I referred to. That birdie or better percentage, that 27.2% of the time, she knocks off a birdie or better. That's the best on tour by nearly 2 percentage points. And if you even narrow it down further, and I found this to be extremely fascinating, is when she is in the fairway, her birdie or better percentage is 32%. Nearly a third of the time that she hits the fairway, she's making birdie from there. That's the kind of player that Nelly Korda is. And she's maintained this consistency throughout the season. And like I said, each and every year she seems to continue to grow in confidence and belief. We saw that this year when she missed the cut at the U.S. Open, went home and came back, recharged better than ever, winning two in a row to get to that number one ranking in the world.
Eamon, how about that scoring average? And what additionally do you think she can do to get even better in 2022?
Isn't this a sign of the pressure that's put on great athletes that she won a major, she became number one in the world, won a gold medal, and we want to know what she's going to do better? I mean, the scoring average I thought was really interesting. She was a shot and a half better last year than she was the year before that, which is an enormous leap. And only one person in the last 17 years has had a better scoring average on the LPGA Tour. And I think she's super consistent. She's got the scoring average. And to me, you look at where the headroom is with Nelly Korda, it's in the major championships. She's made 28 starts in major, six top tens. She's only now starting to find her footing in those biggest events. And to me, that's where the headroom exists for her.
She's the best thing to happen to women's golf for the American audience in quite some time, right? I mean, one name is all that is needed now. It's just Nelly, you know who we're talking about, who we thought Lexi Thompson was going to be 7 years ago, who we thought Michelle Wee might be 15 years ago. In fairness to Michelle, injuries held her back, maybe some expectations. Athletes can have all the qualities that you dream about in terms of being the face of a particular sport, but they still have to win.
Now, Nelly
and Nelly wins, and I think she's going to win some more.
Nelly is Michelle Wee with a healthy body, and she's Lexi Thompson with self-belief.
That is very well said.
Let's take our pick here. On this week, who's going to have a better finish between these two guys? Because there's not much that's really separated them over the last year.
I think Jon Rahm. It's a better, bigger ballpark for Rahm. He's longer. He can swing away because these fairways are wide. It's a little bit soft. There's not going to be a whole lot of wind. I'll say Rahm.
I'm going to agree with you on that one because historically, for the longest time, strokes gained putting correlated more to who won this tournament in terms of where the winner's average finish was over a 10-year stretch. But over the last 6-7 years, strokes gained off the tee has tended to matter more at this golf course, which you wouldn't actually think because it is a pretty wide ballpark to play in. So I'm going to give you that. I'd say Rahm is probably going to have a better finish, but I don't think there's going to be a great deal in it. Which of them is going to have more wins in 2022?
Jon Rahm. Yeah, I think this is a bust-out year for Rahm. I think 3, 4, maybe 5 wins, and the possibility, I think he'll win one major, but the possibility of 2. I think he's a long-term number one. I think he's come into his own. I think he's worked through some of those, I wouldn't even call them anger issues, I would say passion issues. I think he's learned to harness it, to play through mistakes. I think he has an enormous game to match his frame. He keeps his golf swing simple, doesn't get tangled up in swing thought, has a great touch, can putt the lights out. I think it's Jon Rahm. Though I love, do not get me wrong, I absolutely love Colin Morikawa.
I'm going to disagree with you on this one. I think Rahm is actually playing and living with a great deal of clarity right now. He doesn't live a very confused life at all, but nor does Colin Morikawa. What separates him, I think, is Rahm also feels that obligation that a lot of European guys do to show up on the old sod a couple of times every season. And I think that eventually can become a little bit of a distraction. That's the last tournament Rahm played, was when he had to head off to Spain at the end of last year, and we haven't seen much of him since then. I still think the consistency favours Colin Morikawa here. No one hits the ball closer to the hole than Colin Morikawa. And it's like Johnny Miller used to say, you don't actually have to putt that well if you have to lean sideways to see the flag when the ball is on its way there. So I'm giving the edge to Morikawa. But I'm curious, who do you think is actually, of the top 10, let's go back to that top 10 in the official world golf ranking. Who is actually going to, among this group, finish at the top of that pile? If we're sitting here a year from now, whose name is on top?
Rahm. I think Rahm is entrenched as a long-term number one. I think he has everything you need to sit in that spot for quite some time.
No, I think you're wrong again, Rich. I think we're going to go Colin Morikawa on this one again. I think the consistency spurs him to the top of this.
Well, but Rahm is consistent. I mean, Jay Croucher of PointsBet said he's consistent, just doesn't win a ton. But again, we can get nitpicky there, what he could have, should have won, as we mentioned. But Rahm is consistent.
He is, but Morikawa has top trophies.
He was top 10 at every one of the 5 significant championships in golf. I'm talking about the players and the 4 majors. I don't have a problem with his consistency at all.
No, I'm not diminishing his consistency, but he doesn't win as often as level of consistency would suggest. He won 1 tournament last year.
Let's not go there. 6-shot lead, 54 holes. That was just a really unfortunate break. You could argue by his own making with respect to COVID.
Did you see the lead Colin Morikawa blew a couple of months ago on the European Tour? I mean, the leads aren't secure. The fact that he has a 6-stroke lead, all that means had a nice dinner on Saturday night before it went sideways.
I saw Morikawa blow a 5-shot lead in the Bahamas. Now, granted, that's a 20-player field, and, guys are treating it like an exhibition.
The fact that he had a 6-stroke lead is irrelevant to whether or not he was actually going to win on Sunday. It's wishful thinking in that respect. But let's leave these two guys aside for now. Who in that list of the top 10 players in the world, who do you think is going to make the biggest statement this year?
Lewis has convinced me. I hadn't given it, a ton of thought, but he's convinced me that I think Burns is real. And then you factor in that he was the number one ranked junior at one point, was the number one ranked a college player at one point. Why not Burns going deeper into the top 10? He was well outside the top 100, now 10th in the world, won twice, has enormous strengths up and down the line through his bag. Why not Sam Burns? Yeah. How about you?
I think it's a bold choice. I really do think this is the year where Rory McIlroy is going to make a statement. Remind people that he's actually Rory McIlroy, which even he seems to have forgotten at some point over the last few years. But he's cleared away the clutter in his golf swing. A year ago he admitted that he kind of started to chase speed like Bryson and got himself kind of way offline. He was the guy playing best whenever COVID shut down this game. And he's never recovered it since then, despite the 2 wins last year. But he had that brief spell with Pete Cowan that didn't particularly work very well in 2021. Now he's back with his childhood coach, Michael Bannon. He's hit that reset button. He just strikes me as the kind of guy who's setting himself up for a really strong year.
How many times has Rory set the reset button over the last 3-4 years?
Quite a number. Right. So I've got to be right at some point.
Mm-hmm. I love Rory. He played well in winning the CJ Cup in Las Vegas, but those were dome-like conditions. Held a 54-hole lead in Dubai, coughed it up with Morikawa winning. He is my bold prediction of 2022. I think he's going to win the Masters and complete the career Grand Slam. And maybe I'm motivated or moved by what Brad Faxon told me last week. And Fax spent some time with Rory, work on putting. He said, Rory's just playing with joy. There was a time where Rory didn't love, and you would understand this, everything that came with fame and, you know, getting settled into his sort of new life as a father and a husband. But now he sees it clearly, how lucky he is to do what he's doing, the gifts that he has that he doesn't want to waste. And so here he is in his early 30s and in a good spot where I think he's playing with some joy. He's going to let go. He's not going to be playing swing. He's going to be playing golf. And that bodes well if Rory can just free it up. I think he, again, continues to not be so loose in big spots. The numbers bear out. Brandel will tell us this week that he's pretty good with his wedges, but he gets sloppy in big spots, and the putting is hit or miss.
And I think a lot of it is also from the neck up as well. You know, we can talk about playing with joy, but not necessarily relaxation. There has to be a little bit of tension in there. And a few years ago, back in 2018, Rory had a mental game guru following him around for a while who was trying to get him to depressurize all of the major championships to make it mean less. And eventually Rory McIlroy realized that he needed it to mean something, that you can't really take the fuse out and not feel that little edginess that you need to feel in major championships, especially on the weekend. So now I think he's trying to find that equilibrium where it doesn't define his life, but it has to matter.
He is, as you know, a thoughtful guy, but he tends to get lost in thought sometimes, and that, you know, can wreck a great golfer.
Not a common problem on the PGA Tour, Rich.
Or in the ranks of the rank amateurs, as you know. How about Phil Mickelson? Mark Rolfing made, I think, a bold statement yesterday. You'll hear it about this guy, Phil Mickelson, who's back to Kapalua for the first time, or back in this event, first time in 21 years. Phil Mickelson making an appearance on Maui and has not played in the Century Tournament of Champions. 21 years. Two-time winner back in the 90s when it was played at La Costa in Carlsbad, California. Mark Rolfing joined the show on Monday. Check out what he had to say about Phil's chances this week.
Phil really changes everything. This island is totally in a buzz about him coming. It's been 21 years. But I will tell you this. When I look at Phil Mickelson, Rich, this probably is the best chance Phil has to win a PGA Tour event for the rest of his career. He's got to beat 39 other players only. He is going to get a tremendous break with the weather. As you can see behind me, the wind is not blowing at all, and it's going to be sort of a fickle week, really light winds coming from different directions. So I think the players that are used to the trade winds that fairly consistently blow here are not going to see him. So a guy like Mickelson that hasn't been here in a while won't be that far behind in terms of catching up. The fairways are wide open. He can drive it all over Maui and still be in play. And it takes a lot of creativity and imagination. So I don't think Phil is just showing up. I think he is coming to win.
I think it's going to be fun to watch Phil play this golf course, but I would respectfully disagree with the great Rolf, the golfing Rolfing. I think Phil's best chance might actually be at Augusta National. Phil probably does not have enough to drag race with these young dudes and win at 25 under par, which is where the winning score likely will be this week without a whole lot of wins. Consider this, Eamon. Two of his three Masters wins, all right, were at the single digit under par. They were tougher scoring weeks. He won in, let me find the numbers, 9 under par in 2004, 7 under in 2006. He won at Kiawa, the age of 50, at 6 under par. So at Augusta, you know, with his understanding of the golf course, with his touch and feel, if he can find a full swing rhythm and focus, then you know, the way he did it at Kiowa, then I think it's reasonable to think that he can put together four rounds of 200 par 70 at Augusta National or thereabouts to get to 8 or 9 under par with a chance to win. And remember, realistically, if you factor in the older past champions, the amateurs and the first timers, because only Fuzzy Zeller among first timers has ever won there, well, then the field that he has to beat at Augusta National is about as small as the one he's going to try to beat this week at Kapalua.
And the one thing he has at Augusta National that he does not have at Kapalua is institutional knowledge, because Phil knows every ripple and every blade of grass at Augusta National. But when you think about it, Rich, there's been about roughly 17,000 men have teed it up on the PGA Tour over the years, and several women. We've had about 4,000 tournaments. We've had 900 winners thereabouts in PGA Tour history. 8 of them have been over the age of 50. The number of people over 50 who have won more than once, 0. Phil Mickelson is going to be the guy who wins multiple times over 50 on the PGA Tour. I'm not sure it's going to be this week for the simple reason that the 38 guys that he has to beat in the field happen to be the 38 best guys in golf last year.
Brandel and I argue about this on occasion. Phil Mickelson, top 10 player of all time. Is he there now, or does he need to do something more to get there?
If you'd asked me that question before Kiowa, I would have said he was right on the borderline of it. I think Kiowa really did put Phil Mickelson in the top 10 of all times. And 40-odd wins, 44 wins. 45 wins on the PGA Tour. In the era that he's won in, I think Phil Mickelson absolutely belongs in that conversation of the top 10. Kiowa settled it to me.
I agree with you. Let's bring in Paige McKenzie with more on Phil. And specifically, Paige, what do you think of Mark's contention that this will represent the best chance Phil will have to win at Kapalua?
I completely understand where Rolfing's coming from, just from a probabilities perspective, right? With less players in the field, lack of wind on this big ballpark and softer fairways certainly bode well for Phil Mickelson. But I'm gonna say I don't agree ultimately that this would be a great place for Phil to win for one primary reason. We've got Bermuda greens. When I did the statistical analysis, you go to NBC Sports Edge, and boys, I'm telling you, this is such an incredible website if you're into data and analytics. It's got everything on the breakdowns related to what the wind speed is, what the green and grasses are on all the golf courses, and there's only two players in the field worse on Bermuda greens than Phil Mickelson. So for that reason alone, I'm not picking him this week. I don't think this is his best chance. I think we know his success in California. We know Poana greens. I'm more likely to lean towards something on the West Coast.
Curious, Paige. We just had Jay Croucher, head of trading for PointsBet, on the show. You, as well, are immersed in that world. You run numbers like Usain Bolt used to run the 100. You're really good at it. So you just recommended that people go to NBC Sports Edge. Is that correct? Yeah.
That's correct. It's got a phenomenal amount of data.
All right. So somebody's trying to assess what they might want to do this week. I'm talking about a fan that's interested. What would you recommend that in terms of the data that they begin to look at this particular site, NBC Sports Edge?
They actually do have a predictor. So there are suggestions that they take into account as it relates to predicting who they think is going to do the best this week. But if you want to take your own pick, and that's where I was able to divvy out and separate the greens and take a look at exactly how important I think Bermuda greens are going to be this week. And it goes back to me and how I'm evaluating is I do believe it's going to be a low-scoring golf course. So for that reason, I think there's going to be a premium on players that can putt this style of grass. And so that's why I chose to divvy that part out. You can narrow it down to more than just Bermuda, too. If you want to specifically look at Tiff Eagle Bermuda, which is the grass that's being played this week, you can narrow that down as well. My search was just on the last 40 rounds. You could do it on a greater sample size as well. So there's a ton of information there. To me, that was what was significant about evaluating how I feel like Phil is going to do this week. But there's a ton of information. In particular, obviously, if you're into gaming, into betting, that's really useful. If you're an analyst like me, you just like to be able to talk golf with your buddies, also very, very useful.
And lots of people, when they go to Hawaii, like to analyze grass, different grasses. People want to know, inquiring minds want to know, a couple of names this week who are adept, skilled on these kinds of greens.
Sure. Actually, the name that came up is the most proficient on both Bermuda in general and Tiff Eagle in particular was Cameron Champ. Believe it or not, he's had a lot of success on Bermuda grass. I was keeping an eye on, obviously, the odds-on favorite with Justin Thomas. He was very much middle of the pack on this Bermuda grass. There are, you know, limitations to the data, but in this case, I really enjoy looking at it when you're evaluating maybe picks and maybe under the radar picks, somebody like a Cameron Champ, depending on how you feel like his ball striking is. If you know that he's successful on Bermuda grass, maybe that's of interest to you. Mm.
He hits it forever, too. This should be a good golf course from that standpoint. Paige, that was fascinating. Thank you. Golf Today, and we'll give you a look at the major championship venues on the LPGA Tour for 2022. This will be the last year at Mission Hills in the Palm Springs area of California. They're going to move with a new sponsor, the Chevron. That'll be in the Houston area at a golf course that has not yet been determined. Pine Needles has produced some tremendous U.S. Women's Open champions, Annika and Kari Webb, and most recently, 2007, Christy Kerr. They've never been to Congressional, where Rory won a U.S. Open. Ken Venturi, famously in 1964, that's the KPMG Women's PGA. The Evian in France is still, and Minji Lee is the defending champion. And the one that really jumps out, Eamon, for the very first time, the AIG Women's Open will be played at Muirfield. What's the significance of the women playing at Muirfield?
Well, you know, Rich, it's been 40 years since the Women's Open first went to a venue that golf fans would know from the Open Championship Road, and that was Birkdale in 1982. And since then, they've seen most of them. They've been to Turnberry, they've been to Lytham, they've been to Carnoustie, they've been to the Old Course, they've been to Troon. But Muirfield is kind of the unbreachable citadel of stuffy Scottish golf. I mean, they don't even make their own members feel welcome at Muirfield. And they had to actually have a do-over on the vote of admitting women as members back in 2017. And they only had a do-over because the RNA made explicitly clear that you will not even host an Open Championship if you do not have the do-over of the vote. The vote passed, and now we're having a Women's Open there. And it really is just a great sign of progress in this game that the best women golfers in the world can actually compete for that title on what is absolutely one of the best golf courses in the
brilliantly
world.
Stated. Why you should absolutely read Eamon's columns at golfweek.com, Unbreachable Citadel of Stuffy Scottish Golf, for phrases just like that. Paige, as we bring Paige McKenzie back in once more, what is the impact on the women's game when they are linked to these venues, Muirfield and Carnoustie, the Old Course, where legends like Nicklaus and Hogan and Woods made their mark?
To me, that's exactly what it is, Rich. So often I feel like in sport, whether it's golf or other sports, you talk about women's sport and you talk about men's sport. Well, in golf, it can be just the history of the sport. And it's because the venues can be played by both the men and the women. And the fact that the women now have the opportunity to be woven into the tapestry of Muirfield's history, I think is significant because you can walk the same fairways, play the same greens. And I think that's what's most important. I think that's why great venues that women get to play in these major championships are so important, is not only tying to the history, but then also from a fan's perspective. You've seen the shots that have been played, and now you get the opportunity to watch the women do the exact same thing. And I think it does lead to a greater appreciation for what the women are capable of doing as well.
And Paige, the first major of the year is now the Chevron, which is at Mission Hills in California. This is the last year before it moves to Texas, as we mentioned. So what's your feeling on all that?
For me, it's very bittersweet. I've always enjoyed playing Mission Hills. I've enjoyed watching the climax coming up the 18th hole. It's one of the great finishing holes I think this game has. So it's going to be sad to see this final edition happen, knowing that we're not coming back. We're not going to be able to see it again in the future. However, the sweet part of it is that Chevron, because of their partnership, is elevating the LPGA Tour to new heights. It's taking hold of this major championship that has been so important as the first major of the year on the LPGA schedule for so long, and creating a bigger incentive and a bigger reward for the players. It's what the players deserve to be playing for. And if that means a venue change, then that's what's going to happen, and that's going to be the new history of this event. So it's conflicted, it's mixed, but ultimately it's what's best for the LPGA Tour.
I hope they continue to at least remember and honor the late, great Dinah Shore. But with the move from California to Texas, we will lose the tradition of the winner of the Chevron, formerly the ANA, jumping into Poppy's Pond. And you say good riddance to
Absolutely.
That tradition?
It cheapens a major championship.
You are crotchety and speaking of stuffy.
Perhaps I am, but where else does a major champion or somebody contending for a major have to choose their outfit because they're going to be cajoled into a wet t-shirt contest at the end of the day? It demeans the competitiveness of it. I get why it started, and I get that it's fun and jolly, but not everyone is going to be into it. They shouldn't be forced into it.
You are stuffy.
Don't like water on golf courses, Rich.
I don't know that I'm going to miss it, but, you know, it was a cute little addition to that tournament.
Maybe there'll be a swamp in Texas yes. people can dive into as well.
Stay with us. Olympic gold medalist Xander Schauffele is set to make his 2022 debut this week in Hawaii. We're talking a little Xander, trying to jump back into the winner's circle on the PGA Tour. Xander Schauffele is in this field. There is a new eligibility standard. You win the Olympics, and I think that's the way it should be. You get into this field. Did not win on the PGA Tour in 2021, as you look at his 2021 season in review. In fact, he hasn't won on the PGA Tour since the Century Tournament of Champions 3 years ago. He three-putted Maui in 2020 on the 72nd hole and then lost a playoff to Justin Thomas. Since that last victory in 2019, 8 runner-up finishes, 11 top threes, 19 top tens. The one that really stung was that triple bogey at Augusta National, rinsed it on the 16th hole on Sunday. Xander now meets the press. It is Steve Burkowski.
A win, a second, a tie for fifth in his last 3 starts here. Xander, as you kick off 2022 back at Maui, what are some of those good vibes you take from the past success that you hope to continue?
Yeah, you just said it. You know, I've had a lot of success here and have played very well. So, you know, first and foremost, it's always a nice thing to be back. So just looking forward to the week.
What is it about this place that seemingly fits your eye?
I don't know. I think just view for starters, you know, you show up on property and you're kind of at ease. So, yeah, everyone's happy to be here, and everyone's kind of in a good mood, and there's good energy around the property, and maybe I just feed off of that.
How do you reset during the short downtime, if you will, around the holidays with the new year upon us, but still a continuation of last season?
Everyone deals with it differently. Me personally, I just try and take as much time off as possible and sort of relax and kind of get myself back to zero, as I call it, and get myself prepared to compete.
Where do you stand in terms of setting goals with the new year upon us?
Yeah, I didn't... I'm fortunate to be here. Obviously, the Olympics wasn't recognized initially as an invite into this tournament, so I'm happy that they sort of pushed that through, and some players pushed that through as well for me. So, one, I'm happy to stand here, but, yeah, there's a lot I didn't accomplish last year, and those will always carry forward.
What do you take away, though, from 2021 and hope to build on, and as you said, maybe get back here with a win?
Yeah, so many small things. Just trying to check off a lot of small boxes in order to achieve bigger goals.
What have you learned on your time on the PGA Tour that you continue to maybe fine-tune?
It's tricky. We nitpick and we try to strive for perfection, and sometimes you just got to be extra patient in those moments.
Biggest thing you want to accomplish this year would be?
A major championship.
Perfect. All the best. Enjoy the week.
Thank you.
I was chatting with Xander recently, and you always like when an athlete reveals something that you may not have known, give you a better sense of who they are and what makes them tick. So Xander told me that when he wants to get away from the grind of professional golf, he likes to grout. You know, the pace that fills the spaces between tiles. Xander is he's a grout guy. Cement, epoxy, Furon resin. He is a grout shot maker. Rex Hoggard on yesterday's show predicting that Xander will have a grout moment at the majors this year. Your bold prediction for golf, Rex, in 2022.
I think the bold prediction is going to be Xander Schauffele winning a major championship. And Ryan Lavner and I were trading text messages earlier this morning about it. And I told him that, and he kind of gave me an eye roll emoji and said, yeah, the number six ranked player in the world winning a major, way to go out on a limb. But I kind of shot back at him and said, four of the top 10 right now in the world ranking don't have major championships on their resume. Just being in the top 10 is no guarantee that you're going to contend in majors or that you're certainly going to win one. You can go back over the history of the world ranking and point out players that never did get that major championship. I'm talking about Luke Donald and Lee Westwood, who were number one in the world and never were able to close it out. But you look at what Xander did specifically last year, winning the gold medal. That was so much pressure, and the way he performed coming down the stretch, the way he performed at the Ryder Cup. I think all that translates well going into the major championship season, and I'd go immediately to the Masters where he's already had success.
All right, so time now for buy or sell. Eamon, are you buying or selling what Rex says about Xander Schauffele?
Is hold an option in there as well? Because those eight runner-up finishes since his last win are kind of troubling when it comes to Xander Schauffele. He's got every tool in the bag. He's extraordinarily consistent. The guy's missed two cuts in his last 40 starts on the PGA Tour. But I wonder with Xander how much it starts to wear on him that he puts himself in the mix so often. He's played 18 majors in his career. He's top 10 in half of them, which is a remarkable statistic early in his career. But I wonder at what point it starts to wear on you that you get so close so often and don't actually close it out. And that has a knock-on effect. And he's in that kind of dicey area career-wise now, Rich, where I think he's kind of like in that Tony Finau space where he's got every tool possible. He's there all the time, one of the most likable guys in golf. But who does he scare on Sunday afternoon? Because they don't look at Tony and they don't look at Xander as the guy who, once he gets in the mix, is going to close it.
Were you surprised that in his downtime he likes to grout?
That might be the strangest bit of trivia I've ever heard about
any
golfer.
It's National Trivia Day. I mean, look, he likes to grout, you know, lay some tile. You like to drink wine and fire sharp barbs on Twitter, right?
Well, I suppose his is more productive use of time than mine is.
Yes, it is. there's not a lot of wow to Xander's game. To your point, he doesn't scare people. But he's steady, and he and his father, his coach, they're constantly chipping away. Detailed process, as many players have these days, but it's a detailed process. They don't believe in making wholesale changes. They like to chip at the margins and get incrementally better. I think at some point when you're as steady as Xander Schauffele is, one will fall his way. When I say one, I think, you know, one tournament at this point. Yeah. He's looking for any tournament win, but one major, I think, will fall his way. I don't have him winning one this year, but obviously, you know, you're not shocked. He's a top 10 player in the world. He's high quality.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if he didn't win multiple majors in his career. He just seems so steady. And I always look at him and I look at JT in the same breath here. Both guys have their father as coach, lifetime coach. And which is great because it reduces the amount of turmoil. There's fewer people coming and going in your life. But it also potentially makes it more difficult to get rid of something that isn't working if it's a family relationship involved as well. I'm not saying it's not working in the Xander Schauffele case, but it's an interesting dynamic that a lot of players don't have to deal with is when it's your father is the guy who's also your swing coach.
I've spent quite a bit of time around Xander and his dad, Stefan. They're more frat brothers than they are father and son, at least that's the vibe.
His dad enjoyed that gold medal more than Xander did.
He did. I walked up Tuesday practice round outside Japan at the Olympic Games. They were, you know, in shorts. It was very casual. I started chatting with Stefan, and we walked, and Xander looks over. He goes, please, take him off my hands. Four, five, six holes, whatever you can do for me. You know? And we had a good chat. The old man's an interesting dude.